This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Mass Bay Guides. Mass Bay Guides is our family-run charter fishing fleet that's based out of Scituate, Massachusetts. We've been providing anglers with the ultimate fishing adventure for over 20 years. Whether you're looking to put together a multi-boat corporate fishing trip, a trip for your family, or you're an avid angler looking to catch a giant bluefin tuna, our crew will do anything it takes to make sure you and your friends and your family have a great day on the water. To book a trip with us, please visit the Mass Bay Guides website, www.massbayguides.com. You can search prices, trip information, and get the latest reports and links to our social media pages there. You can also find us directly on Facebook and Instagram and just search Mass Bay Guides. This episode is also brought to you by LT Marine Products. Since 2011, LT Marine has been designing and developing innovative, unique, and high-quality American-made sport fishing equipment. Taylor and I have known the crew at LT since they started. Chris is a great guy. We've been using every single piece of equipment that he's made over the last several years. His rod holders are extremely heavy-duty and high-quality. He has the machining equipment to be able to put your boat name on the faceplates and do other custom work as well, which is pretty cool. And recently, over the last couple of years, we've worked with him to develop some new products that have actually been very popular amongst the Northeast Northeast fishermen, specifically offshore and tuna fishermen. So two of those products have been his swim hook for if you're harvesting a big giant tuna, you want to take care of that fish as best you can prior to bringing him on board. And part of that process is after the fight, swimming the fish, for a certain amount of time, kind of depending on the health of the fish and how the fight went, but usually ends up being around an hour to get all the lactic acid out of the muscles and give a better product at the end of the day when we sell our fish. So we helped him design an affordable swim hook to be able to tow the fish behind the boat at a low speed and accomplish that goal. So that was a pretty cool product that we collaborated on. And another one is the new LT Marine release hook. We've been doing a lot of release fishing for giants over the last couple of years with the way that the quota has been open and closed. So we've really had a need for a way to properly revive these fish and get them back into good health upon release. So if you go on the LT Marine website, you can see the release hook there. You can also go on our Instagram, Facebook, and see how we have it rigged. But it's a tool that we've implemented into our process aboard our boats, and it makes releasing fish a lot safer for the crew, a lot better for the fish, and it's a really high quality product. We used it all season, never had a problem, never broke it. So definitely check out that new release hook from LT. Or if you want to see any of Chris's products, visit ltmarineproducts.com. Please make sure you use the promo code CBROS for 10% off your next order. Our guest on this episode of the podcast is a true Renaissance man and is a top-notch charter captain out of Anna Maria Island in Florida. We've been lucky enough to call this guy our friend since 2017. When we met down there, long story short, where they keep the boats in their charter fleet is near our grandparents' house down there. So we've had the pleasure of many early morning coffees, fishing trips, good stories, good laughs with today's guest. Today's guest has been fishing his entire life, like many of us. He started as a child in Illinois, where he grew up fishing freshwater in the Great Lakes. And when he was 19, he moved full-time down to Florida to pursue a career in charter fishing, also the restaurant industry, which he gets to in this conversation. And his charter business, fast forward from them, is now doing over 400 trips a year across their fleet. Super successful, running mostly inshore trips down there on the Gulf Coast of Florida, Gulf side of Florida near Anna Maria Island, and running offshore trips as well. We share a lot of great stories with this guest. We've had the pleasure of having him up to Massachusetts with his family to stay with us and giant bluefin fish for a few days back in 2019. We've fished many times with him on his boat and company boats down in Florida, you know, catching snook, redfish, you know, every species that that the Florida Gulf side has to offer. We've even made trips down to, or a trip down to the Everglades, which was pretty fun, pretty interesting. And we talk about that. We all own dogs. He has a little Chihuahua that's absolutely terrifying and hysterical. He has two little girls and another on the way. And he's truly one of the most passionate fishermen that I know. And you'll come to, I think you'll come to hear that in this episode as he talks about tarpon fishing and what gets him going as, you know, a charter captain, as a fisherman. We apologize ahead of time for some interrupted service, remote podcast issues. So if it cuts in and out, we did our best to kind of splice and edit things together. But it may cut in and out, so we apologize for that. But bear with us. The content is great. The conversation is hysterical. And our guest is absolutely worth the full listen. So without further ado, please welcome to the podcast, Captain David White and Anna Maria Charters. Welcome to the Sea Bros Fishing Podcast, where we follow three words of wisdom. You can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the last, you'll just have to keep listening. Stay tight.
Am I coming off or what? Get that down. Don't get on that rock.
Dude, how do I get one of those mugs? Is that just a sticker on a mug?
That's a sticker on a mug.
Oh, okay.
Looks good, though.
You have to attend.
Oh, he's breaking up.
A banquet, and they give you the mug. And then it's the best mug there. They blow those Yeti mugs out of the water.
We actually have
a couple. Which I didn't think was possible.
Deep sent us a couple of those.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Yeah, they're good.
Do you know if your phone's on their Wi-Fi?
If it's on what?
If your phone's on Wi-Fi or not, or is it on cell?
Oh yeah, it's on Wi-Fi.
Okay,
cool.
Is that good or bad?
No, I just broke up a couple times, but it's good now. Maybe it's just connecting. I don't know.
Does it seem like it's laggy on your end, or does it seem pretty good?
No, it's all good.
All right,
cool.
So last night at like 3 o'clock in the morning, I get. Like the dog fucking hacking up,
yeah,
sound. He puked, what I mean, inches from my mouth.
Oh my,
oh my
dude,
god,
in between the Claire and I's pillow, like just a pop. 3 o'clock in the morning, I had to rip apart all the pillowcases. All the
dude,
sheets.
I would have lost my shit.
It was unreal.
That's gross.
That's good.
So tell us about your dog.
He pukes little pukes. You know, he's like 7 pounds. So
are his poops like little like little acorn size?
Yeah, it's like goat poop.
Dude, I'm so, you know, petrified, like a whole of that bunch dog.
A whole bunch of little ones, you know. He's good. He's a psycho.
Yeah.
Oh, he's awesome though.
No, I can't look at him in the eyes. I feel like he's judging me all the time.
I had to cut his fingernails, right? So I had to take one of those like cloth shopping bags, and I had to cut a hole out for his head and cut 4 holes in it and put him in the shopping bag, right? So then Heather had to hold the bag so he's up off the ground so we could cut his neck because he's trying to bite us. Divider. I just want to make sure my ringer's off here.
All right.
Yeah, there we go. I'm getting some email interference.
No worries.
Maybe man. That's what it is.
Yeah, that might have been it. It seems on right now, though. So,
busy.
Yeah, what's the charter schedule looking like for the next couple weeks, month, whatever?
Crazy. But we got, so like, it looks like tomorrow is going to be fishable, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is not. So, and then like Christmas Eve and Christmas Day are like super nice, but you know, we're taking those days off. So
yeah,
we may lose a couple, but it's saying 30 miles per hour out of the south.
That's not fun.
So that's kind of gnarly. Yeah. I mean, at least it's going to be warm. It's not going to be freezing, but.
Did all the fog disappear when we left?
Yeah, left right with you.
No way. You haven't had fog since?
Yep. Gone.
Dude, what? Can you explain what happened?
You guys went home, I guess.
Oh, dude. It's so typical.
Your vacation was over.
Yeah. I will say, though, overall, we did hit the weather pretty good.
Yeah. You know? Like wind-wise?
Yeah, wind-wise and fishability.
Visibility-wise, not so much.
Yeah, no.
Well, what was nice was, you know, during the fog, like, nobody knows where you're at. There's not a lot of boats on the water. Like, you guys left, and there was one day I was on these redfish out there at Egmont on that flat, and, like, I was on them by myself, and then it got nice out, and then there's four guys on them. You know what I mean? And they just don't act the same. They're not, you know, they're running instead of chilling.
Yeah.
So.
That's tough.
Frustrating. A bunch of permit showed up too, which is nice. But they're all sketched out. There's sharks all over there now. Sharks, big barracudas. So they're all sketched out. They won't even stop and eat the chum. They just keep moving. So I got on them good one day. And then I tried two more days. You know, for an hour each time, but I just couldn't get them to stop. They're sketched out.
Hmm. So cool to see the differences day to day like that, like visually too. It's pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, how many days a year? Probably I fish like 300 days a year. And what keeps it cool and keeps it fresh is like the visual. You know what I mean? Like the sight fishing and the watching the eat and, you know, that, I mean, that's what keeps me interested. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like on day number six of a double, you know what I'm saying? Like when
you need something.
Watching a snook. Right. Yeah. Watching a snook eat a bait in 2 feet of water is still pretty sweet.
Absolutely.
You know, it's still exciting.
Totally jealous of that, by the way.
Yeah. I wish we had.
We get some visual stuff, but nothing like that.
Yeah, it's not as consistent, for sure.
Yeah.
And they fight way harder.
Well, we'll circle back to, like, your, you know, how you grew up fishing and charter fishing now in your program. But we want to start off with a handful of questions, rapid-fire questions. First answer that comes to mind, and we might tangent off for, like, 20 minutes.
Or the whole time.
Or the whole time.
Which has happened.
I mean, there's a couple of doozies because we were just there that are just, I think, gonna be great to talk about. But do you want to start or do you want me to start?
You can start.
All right. If you had to pick one lure to feed your family with for the rest of your life, what would it be?
A lure,
an artificial, anything artificial to feed your family for the rest of your life, what would it be?
A Berkeley Gulp shrimp.
Wow.
It's a solid answer.
It is.
I thought he was going to say like...
something like weird.
Yeah, like Yozuri spook or
like
something.
Or like a crazy fly.
Yeah. But that makes total sense.
He picked the obvious, I guess.
Anything will eat that.
I mean, anything will eat it. And if you got to feed your family, you got to make smart decisions.
Yeah.
A fly?
Yeah, we're not feeding families of flies.
No, I'll tell you that much.
Recreational only. That's a luxury item.
Oh, yeah. Dude. Superstitions. Do you have any superstitions on or off the water?
Yeah, don't touch the net or the gaff until it's time. you know, like until it's fucking time, like right now, like it's time to gap. If you're standing there with the net, if you go and grab the net, as soon as they hook the fish is going to come off. And don't say, got one. Like every time, man, I'm like, they're like, got one. And then it comes off. I'm like, every time, man. So those are the two. Don't touch the net or the gaff until it's time to use
That's
it.
That's the first time I've heard that one.
And what's that?
That's the first time I've heard don't first touch the net or the gaff.
Yeah.
Yep. Can you hear us?
Until it's time to.
Until it's time to put it in the fish.
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah. There's a delay, I guess.
Yeah, until it's time to stick them or scoop them. You know, like you can get it out and put it in a rod holder, but don't stand around there and walk around with it. You know, like I just don't. I think it's bad juju.
Agreed. We've had a couple people put the harness on and try to walk around in that all day, like when we were catching small fish.
Like a stand-up harness.
Yeah.
All day long.
Yeah. All right. Tarpon or giant bluefin tuna?
I enjoy the jumping of a tarpon.
Yeah.
The jumping of a tarpon. I enjoy. The bluefin tuna, it's a lot of work. It's awesome. But man, it's hard to beat a tarpon.
Yeah, we knew.
You know, it's so super visual. You see the eat, you see the jumps, you see fucking everything. I mean, you're looking him in the eye. You know, like, you know, quite a bit during the fight. You know, it's cool. I enjoy that, and it's nothing personal.
No, I mean,
how about a tarpon or a permit?
A tarpon.
Tarpon.
Tarpon. You know, they're smart. You know, like you guys. Like you said, it's way more personal with the animal, you know, when you hook a fish that big for that long with the tarpon, you know, you got to think a 16-pound tarpon or a tarpon that's 16 years old is 100 pounds is like a minimum of like 20 years old. You know, if you catch a 200 pounder, if you hook a 200 pounder, which we hooked one that was like and landed one that was probably 200 pounds, it's like a 70-year-old animal.
That's insane. You know, like, insane.
You could be throwing a fly at the fish that the guy you read about when you were 15 that got in the, I mean, the, he threw a fly at the same fish, like legitimately, you know what I mean? They had one in the zoo in Chicago and it was like 220 pounds and it jumped out and died, right? So they cut the bone out of his head and they tested it. It was 83 years old.
Wow.
That's insane.
I mean, like they're smart. They know where to go, where not to go, water quality, like people throwing crabs, bouncing crabs off their head. They're like, how many times have we seen this? You know what I mean? Like, that's why the approach has to be right. Playing it out. That's why I hate that dead baiting them. You know what I mean? When they get in the pass and just dump buckets of dead thread fin over and get them behind the boat, like that's not how it's supposed to be done.
Yeah.
If you respect the animal,
yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean, like if you want to earn it and catch them the right way and like respect for the fish, like I think the beach fishing them is like the way to go, you know what I mean? Granted, you hook them in the past that way, and but where's the skill in that,
right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just dump a bunch of shit behind your boat and eventually they're going to pile up, you know, 500 feet back there and start eating it. Well, yeah. Yeah. It's kind of how nature is, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's like chunking.
It's like baiting a bear.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or it's like baiting a bear.
Right.
You know, or like baiting deer, you know what I mean? Like I understand that people do it and it's a form of hunting, but is it hunting? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's a weird fine line.
Yeah, like just put a bunch of food out and wait for them to show up. Like, if it's fucking hungry, it's gonna show up, dude.
Yeah.
You know.
No, definitely. I think it, you know, definitely takes an aspect out of the hunt to it for sure.
Which, you know, to each their own. But if I, you know, for me, I like to get on the beach. I like to find the schools of fish, like doing what they do in their natural element. And we've watched it change, right? Now the fish just pile up in the pass and stay in the pass because people are just dumping out hundreds of pounds of thread fins, snipping them and putting them out the back of the boat. So those fish aren't leaving. They're just staying there, you know, where they used to work the beach. You know, they'd go like north to south, you know, in the daytime. So it's different to watch it. And you can see how that activity and that, you know, like practice from the anglers changes how the fish do what they do, you know?
We've seen that quite often, especially up in Canada, like this last year. You know, not all of the fish, but a certain body of fish gets so dialed in on the herring boats and, you know, that bait fishing activity that it's just an easy meal for them. They're there the same time every day. You know, they don't vary as much tide to tide there. But then there's
fish. That's a guarantee.
It's almost a guarantee. And then you have fish that, you know, set up along the beach eating mackerel. And those are the fish that you're like hunting the birds down, looking for the school on the surface, trying to set up, you know, the right drift, the right approach, troll by them the right way. It's a completely different form of fishing, but
it's tough too as a charter boat. Cause you have to, you know, you want to produce results. So it's like, there's times that you probably have to do things you really don't want to be doing, which is a whole nother, that's a whole nother part.
Yeah. But we know this is how this goes,
right?
I know.
Yeah.
When I first started, I took these guys, right? And like, I wasn't that good at tarpon fishing yet. So I went to the pass and they hooked 9 fish. You know what I mean? And they landed like 5 of the 9. Well, now they call and they want to do that again. And I'm like, I don't do that anymore. You know, like that's not how I fish them anymore. You know, so yeah, there are desperate times to call for desperate measures. But I'm at the point now where I'd rather call off a charter and be like, hey, you know, it's blowing on the beach. You know, we can't see the fish, yada, yada, then go out and do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd rather, I don't know if it's a pride thing or whatever, but I would rather forfeit the money.
Right. Well, you're busy enough too, so you don't have to make that decision all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's good.
And I might've been busy enough there then too, but I just didn't have the skill or the knowledge to, you know, to try it different. And like, it's so much more rewarding to see this fish, you know, because when you hook them to pass, you're hooking them like 35 feet of water. You know what I mean? Like, some fish don't jump at all. Would you rather hook them in 35 feet of water? We're not going to jump at all. There's 30 boats behind you that you have to navigate through their anchor lines and all this stupid shit. Or would you rather hook them on the beach in 10 feet of water, where as soon as you hook them, they go straight up in the air? Yeah. I'd rather hook one fish that way and 5 fish the other way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where you watch the eat, as soon as he eats, he jumps, you know what I mean? And like, he's trying to stay with the school, and you know what I mean? It's, I think it's way more rewarding. And I tell my people that too, you know what I mean? Like, because when we go out the pass, there's all these boats in there. You know what I mean? They're like, what are those people doing? I'm like, well, they're tarpon fishing, but you know, we don't do it that way.
Right. And you're not catching them to eat them. So it's like, you want to catch them in a way that's fun as hell.
Yeah, exactly. And personally, if I had my choice, like, I'd never touch a tarpon. Like, we'd jump it. We'd fight it. Once the jumps are over and the bulldogging starts and the hour of just grinding it out, I'd break the fish off and let him go out about his business. I wouldn't let him get eaten by a fucking shark. I wouldn't let him get handled improperly. I wouldn't run the risk of that fish dying. It's freaking 50 years old, dude. You know what I mean? I'd rather just get the jumps, get the excitement, break them off. But, you know, you want the hero pictures, you know what I mean? Which I enjoy too, you know what I mean? But when you have done it a whole bunch, the jumps are what it's all about. Like, when you fly fish for them, you get to eat, you get a few jumps, you break them off. It's like what you do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, getting into the boat isn't really... I mean, it's, if you get it to the boat, cool, but if not, cooler.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know how the sharks are here. Like, if you fish them around the Skyway Bridge, like, dude, they're getting eaten. Like,
that's insane.
Last year, I just stopped fishing up there because, I mean, they're just laying there waiting, you know?
It's crazy.
I mean, imagine if you're a giant bluefin fishing.
I know.
Well, like, I've revived them. Right. And like 100%, he's good to go. He's shaking his head. I let him go. He swims out to the side. Boom. Just crushed. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, fuck, man. You know what I mean? It doesn't make you feel really good about what you're doing.
Huh. It's wild. I'm glad we don't have that.
Yeah. As bad yet.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely getting worse on the sharks for us, for sure.
But yeah. Not, I mean, not
nothing that are eating bluefin every other hookup or every, you know.
Yeah.
Every 50 hookups, every 100 hookups probably.
Yeah. It's a rare, rare thing to hear about, but it does happen.
Well, it's a much larger animal. You know what I mean? Like, it better be a big shark that's coming to mess with that thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're here, you know, an 8-foot bull shark has no problem taking a bite out of tarpon. It's tired.
Yeah.
In caring for the fish, I guess, direction of this conversation, circle hook or J hook?
In general?
In general, if you had to pick one.
100% circle hooks.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, probably like 95% of the time we use circle hooks.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, you know, I'm fishing for like an edible species, you know, like sheep's head or something like that. Permit can be a little hard because it can affect the motion of the shrimp in the water if you don't use a J hook. But yeah,
you should be good now.
All right.
So
you hear me?
Yeah, we heard you. We kind of cut out at hooking shrimp with J hooks so that you're presenting the shrimp right for permit.
Well, you guys saw when we caught all those snook. I mean, each snook was hooked right in the button.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, quickly pop it out and he's on his way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, the kingfish or, you know what I mean? Something like that we're going to eat. You know, it is what it is. But, yeah, like all those snook, all the catch and release fish, man, they just, and these one tarpon hooks we use, they're just money. And like, we've tried them all and this is the one. Like, I found the one. You know, where like every fish stays buttoned up.
That's great. All right. Scale of 1 to 10. Where did Taylor and I stack up in our gag grouper angling abilities?
Well, in your defense, it wasn't a good bite. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a good bite. If they would have been going off, you would have been like an 8 or a 9. You know,
all right.
Wow, that's a lot higher than I thought.
Because I mean, they weren't going off. We had those one tide days, you know, it was one incoming tide all day. Like this last week was fire for him. And I had people that weren't very good. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I was able to get way off of the wreck. The fish were more fired up. They were coming out away from the wreck, you know, where you had some fighting room. You know what I mean? Instead of being like right on the wreck, trying to get him to bite. So a 7 or an 8 or a 9.
All right, cool.
He's getting lower.
As long as it's going to be a 5 by the time he comes up here to visit again.
If we were going by that performance alone, you know, it would have been like 7, but you didn't really have that good of a chance. You know what I mean?
We couldn't like get the rep. We couldn't get the reps in due to the tide. Basically,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah,
we went probably 3 for 10 overall.
Yeah,
3 for 12.
Yeah, I will say Dad broke like 4 off, and then I pinned one on and immediately pulled a mile of the wreck.
Yeah, so you're just awesome.
I think you're bringing us down to a 7.
At least I got bites, not a bite.
Those couple first ones were the real ones.
Those
couple ones were like the ones. Like those are, you know. But
it's all good. I said got one, that's why.
Exactly.
Got one.
You high five when you set the hook.
Probably.
All right. So you have a slight background, excuse me, in cooking. Favorite fish to eat / favorite fish to cook.
Gag. I mean, it would be tuna, but you can't eat tuna every day.
No, you can't
eat gag every day.
Hell yeah,
you definitely know what I mean? Could. I could eat those gag grouper nuggets that you make every single day. Every single day, I could eat those gag grouper nuggets.
They're good.
How did you get into cooking again?
What's going down tonight. I'm making stuff. Just the restaurant business. My dad owned a restaurant on Anna Maria. I was like 15. So cooking breakfast in there and lunch in there. And then I got a job at the city pier and I was like the fry kid, you know, frying all the fish. And then I worked up to saute and then I did that for a while. And then I went to the waterfront and sauteed there. and then learned a whole bunch of stuff there. And then the waterfront burned down, and I went to this place called the Sign of the Mermaid. I worked under this chef there, Ed Spring, and he was the man, like legit chef, you know, all sauces and all that good stuff. So I learned a whole bunch from him. And then other restaurants, but that was the one that like legit, you know, searing and sauces and making, you know, roux and making sauces out of the roux and, you know, roux is, mm-hmm. roux is like, it's like a butter flour and you cook that down and that's what's a thickening agent. You know, you just, that's on in your cooking space. And that's just, you add that to anything to mm-hmm. thicken it. So a big learning thing for me working for that guy.
That's great.
I got a picture sitting on my desk, right? So look, this is a picture from when I was 15. All right. This is how not to tarpon fish. Are you ready?
Yeah. He's got a fish.
Do you think I had as much respect for the animal then?
Yeah,
as I do now.
No, but no. That's
times were different.
You've evolved. You've yeah. evolved as a fisherman. You know, like anyone that who does it for a long
2000.
Time.
2000. That was in the year 2000. Yeah, tarpon pulled up on the beach, trying to take the hook out with a flashlight and a cigarette hanging out of my mouth. probably 130 pounder.
Do you have jorts on? Do you have jorts on?
Yeah, those are just cargo pants. I got a nice looking fleece on.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
When did you start fishing? Like young, or did you get into it kind of?
Oh, shoot, man. Yeah, really, really, really young. My grandpa owned a bait and tackle store in Danville, Illinois. So from the time I was born. So grew up in there. And then, yep, then he passed away when I was like 12 and my mom got it in the will. So like we lived in there. You know what I mean? My mom was always in there. She ran the bait and tackle shop and summers I was in there. So forever, man. And then up there, you know, there's like seven species you fish for, you know, there's like bluegill, bass, bluegill, crappie, largemouth, smallmouth, catfish, walleye. I mean, there's like seven total. So you get pretty good at honing in on those seven. You know what I mean? Like, so I got pretty good at it. Tournaments and all that fun stuff. The bass tournament thing, you know.
Did you want to be a bass master?
No. Then I did. Yeah, yeah. Then I did.
Everyone did.
I don't. Bassmaster Classic. Kevin Van Dam.
David White's a good Bassmaster name.
It is.
Dude, I could see with a white glitter bass boat and like a white cowboy hat and white cowboy
rods,
boots.
White rods, white reels.
Yeah.
Give me a white Triton. My brother's got one. A $60,000 freaking bass boat, you know? Crazy.
You should bring that down to the Everglades next year.
Yeah. That kid would die down there in on Okeechobee with that thing.
Oh God. So tell us about how you made it down to Florida and kind of how your career began down there and, you know, your current program. Take us on that evolution.
This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Deckitt New England and Deckitt Premium Marine Flooring. We do a lot of charters every year. Usually our boats end up doing upwards of 200 trips a year, and the non-skid on our decking and flooring on our boats gets beat up pretty quickly. You know, dragging anchors across it, a lot of feet from our customers, you know, rough weather days, sliding fish, you name it, it beats the bag out of the gel coat and out of the non-skid. So recently it was time to upgrade the non-skid and decking on our center console. And instead of going with traditional gel coat and non-skid application, we decided to go with Deckitt's cross-linked high-density foam marine flooring. And we've been super pleased with it. The install was quick and easy. Basically required one day to nail down the layout of the decking using a special machine that Deckitt has. That is then put into a CAD drawing, and the material is cut and sent to your door. The install on our center console took a day, actually just shy of a day, and it came out awesome. This stuff is truly commercial grade. It's very high density foam, a lot denser and more durable than other products that you may see on the market. And it's all customizable. So from the layout to the design on your boat, to the colors, to the patterns, you have a lot of different options with Deckitt. So if it's time to upgrade the marine flooring and deck surface on your boat, definitely make sure you look at Deckitt as an option. If you're located in New England, you can follow Deckitt_New England on Instagram or call Jack at Deckitt New England directly at 508-916-8468. Or you can just go on Deckitt's website, which is Deckitt.com, Deckitt.com, for more product information or for the complete dealer list if you aren't located in New England. So if you guys are in the market for new marine flooring, the Deckitt stuff is no joke, and we've put it to the test. So make sure you check it out. We're back.
Yeah. Yep. So like the evolution of the business, basically I started out on my own. You know, and it was Great White Charters. And then, you know, I was approached by my friend to partner up. He's he's super successful on the island with a restaurant. We partnered up. We were able to, there's nothing that we can't offer a client, from fly fishing charters on a $65,000 fly fishing poling skiff to 50 miles offshore in a 34-foot contender with a full restroom and twin 300s, you know, and everything in between we can do, which is, nice. You know, there's some other companies out there that do offer, you know, that can offer a broad spectrum. But I don't feel like with the quality of boats and stuff that we provide, you know what I mean? Like, we've gotten a lot of positive reviews just on our equipment, let alone how the fishing was, you know what I mean?
Right.
Which is good. And I wouldn't have been able to do that on my own. I can't go out and buy a $65,000 18-foot boat. You know what I mean? But having the business partner, has it been able to help the business evolve in that direction?
Yeah, no, you have some awesome resources at your disposal. I mean,
yeah. And I've, you know, I've got some negative, you know, I've had some people that were, you know, like, I didn't earn it, or, you know what I mean? Which,
right.
Whatever, that's going to happen. But we're also running like 400 trips a year. You know what I mean? So that's probably going to generate a little hostility as well. You know what I mean? Like, when we're out there every single day,
yes, yeah,
you
jealousy. Know what I mean?
But we are also the ones that are every night adding content to our Google page, making sure every client leaves a review on TripAdvisor and Google. You know, that takes work, like, to make sure everybody has access to leave us a review without having to go search the internet. You know, I shoot them a link, both of them, you know, if I had five people on the boat, five people get a link to leave me a review. You know what I mean? And that has elevated us in the ranks. People don't come to Florida and then look for a fishing charter. They're on their couch in Ohio looking for a fishing charter after they booked their reservation in Florida. You know what I mean? Like, we don't live in the day and age anymore where you go into the tackle shop and ask who the best captain is. I wish that we did, but it's just not where we're at anymore, you know? Yeah.
And fishing's one of those service. I mean, charter fishing's one of those service industries that testimonials are enormous.
Yeah.
You know, big time. It's a very personal experience. So you want to make sure you're going with someone that's dialed and that your family's going to have a good time with. So
yeah.
That extra effort, you know, goes a long way and helps hold your clients for you too.
Yeah, and you know, I do two ads or two fishing reports, you know, a week, you know, and that takes time. I don't want to at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night be doing a fishing report for the newspaper, but I do it because I know that it generates business.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, we don't have anything like that. I mean, we have some, we have like Colston Angler and some things like that, but it seems like the newspaper and things by you guys is much different from up here.
Well, you and Emily are going to be in next week's Anna Maria Island Sun, you know, with those two snook, you know what I mean? Like, people look at that, you know, put a fishing picture in the island newspaper and tourists pick that up, you know, it's a free newspaper.
Fishing's
so we just don't get that business up here, you know, we don't get that. We get tourists, but it's not like
our season's just so much shorter, you know, it's not even it's hard to compare. What do you think overall have been some of the biggest challenges that starting and maintaining a charter business has associated with it?
Water quality issues. Things beyond my control and our control. Governmental regulation issues. You know, how much phosphate goes into our water. You know, red tide and, you know, doesn't do any good for the charter business. And weather, but weather is, you know, you're always going to have weather 5 days here, 5 days there, bad weather. But the long term is definitely, you know, like our water quality issues. And then you have things like COVID and travel bans and things like that. But the rest of the world is experiencing that as well.
Right.
You know.
Now, what's happening down there that you can explain to people that that's
the, well, the so basically Tampa Bay, Florida in general is home to Mosaic and the phosphate industry. Phosphate industry is responsible for phosphogypsum, which goes into drywall, phosphate for fertilizer, phosphate for food preservatives. It's a billion-dollar industry, and the ways that they mine phosphate are the same ways they mined phosphate in 1950. They blast this phosphate rich ground with water, and then it creates a slurry, like a slushy, and they filter this out, and they filter the phosphogypsum out of it, process that, and all the water that's left is retained in these giant retention ponds that you can never do anything with. It's these 800 million gallon ponds of nitrogen and phosphate rich radioactive water that they just pile up and store, you know, and how long you do that, you know, like it's not sustainable. So that seeps into our waterways, or like we had in Piney Point, it freaking ruptures and leaks 200 million gallons of nitrate. Was that your dog?
Yeah, he was just howling.
into Tampa Bay, you know? And, like, what that does is if there's any hint of that Carina brevis algae, which is red tide, you know, it just makes it explode. It's like putting Miracle-Gro on something green. And the reason they're able to defer responsibility is because, so if you're going to put nitrogen on your yard, you're not going to expect results tomorrow. But in a month, you're going to expect results and you'll get results. So it normally doesn't happen right after a spill. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't happen the day after. It happens a month after. And then when it happens, it explodes. And, you know, that happened this year. I mean, it was on national news. I went on TV twice. You know, trying to like bring attention to it so something could be done. I've been on numerous like boards in Tampa with representatives for Congress for our area to figure out how to stop it. But at the end of the day, it's a giant company that feeds Florida financially. You know what I mean? Like Mosaic is a huge company. So, you know, it's something that, it's a helpless thing because nothing's being done, you know, like now they say that they're going to drain this one and they're going to drill. They're going to deep well inject it underneath the Florida aquifer. So all this water is going to go into the ground in Florida. And they're hoping that through time, as the sediment filters it out and it reaches the Florida aquifer, it'll be clean water. But regardless, there's no good way of doing it. You know what I mean? Like, it's all bad. but it's also all a necessity for human beings, unfortunately, at this point.
That's tough.
It's tough, man.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and what ultimately, you know, pays the price are populations of fish and then anything that goes along with that, you know, the industry.
How have you had to, like, pivot on a day-to-day basis with how bad, you know, red tide's been and, you know, when those algae blooms have been at their worst? Like, do you just straight-up cancel trips or are you going areas to fish? Or?
Yeah, you got to find clean water, you know, find different areas to fish. Luckily, Anna Maria Island, we have the Manatee River, you know, up there where, like, where Blinkers is. The Manatee River flows out and it flows past the north tip of Anna Maria into the Gulf, and it creates this natural barrier of water that keeps the water in from Tampa Bay from, you know, like getting into our area because the outflow of the Manatee River. And luckily this year when that was happening, we had a whole bunch of rain. So the Manatee River, it didn't see an incoming tide. Like if it did, it wasn't much. So it was constantly flowing out because all the water they had, they opened the dam up on the river, the Braden River. So it was always flowing out and it just kept that natural barrier there. So Anna Maria didn't get it bad. But Tampa super Bay got it really bad. Yeah. Super lucky. It's just the way that, you know, the flow of the water kept it from us. Tampa Bay was really bad. I mean, you'd go out there and, you know, I was fishing the school of redfish and they were all, you know, 35 plus inch fish breeders. And then you go out the next day and they're all floating dead, like literally the same school that you were fishing. Wow.
Yeah, that's bad. Brutal. Just being on the boat was bad. You could had trouble breathing and your eyes yep. were watering. It was gross.
It affects tourism really bad. And, you know, there's two ways that people handle it. There are charter guys that are like, you shouldn't be talking about this. You know, it's going to deter business. You know, we're still booking charters. We want people to know. We're trying to hide it, basically. I would rather bring it to people's attention and try and put a long-term solution on it than try and make the dollar today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I got kids that I don't want to have to deal with this problem. You know what I mean? In 20 years, I want, like, the people in office to, like, you know, figure something out. So
mitigate as best as they can.
If I'm all about the dollar right now, then I'm no different than the people that are putting that water into our freaking ecosystem. You know what I mean? Is the way that I look at it.
That's a bad challenge. That's a face. I mean, we don't really face anything like that by yet. Us major
yet.
Yet.
Yeah. Well, you guys get a form of red tide, but it's, you know, it's like supernatural. Like it's a natural thing that happens in nature and it's happened since the 1800s, you know, like here it's happened since, you know, documented times, but we just exacerbate it by feeding it nitrogen. You know, what could be a short, quick bloom where it kills off a small area of fish is just now it's the whole West Coastline, you know, from like Naples all the way up to, you know, as far north as, you know, North Tampa area.
It's crazy.
What's your,
we're learning how to deal with it.
Yeah, for sure. What's, we kind of talked about like an actual challenge for your charter fishing business. What's the biggest daily challenge that you face with charters?
Like with the people or with your
daily process? Like what's the challenge that you face that's probably the hardest with your charter fishery?
I mean, you know, catching bait is a chore every day. You know, it depends on where the bait is or what the weather's doing, where the bait goes to. And then on the, you know, the client end is managing expectations, you know, like I had a guy, so this was, what's today? Sunday. So Friday I had a charter scheduled for Saturday, yesterday. This woman booked a charter for her son and her husband and they're from New Jersey City, New Jersey. Right. So she booked it, 4-hour inshore charter. So I called the guy Friday night just to touch base and let him know, hey, we're good for tomorrow morning. He's like, good. You know, we're really looking forward to targeting cobia. And I was like, well, we're not going to be targeting cobia. And he's like, well, no, we're, you know, that was the plan. That's what my wife said. And I'm like, your wife and I never spoke about targeting cobia. I'm like, you know, you couldn't target cobia right now. I'm like, frankly, you can't really target cobia anytime around here. Like, you know, you're out there, you're on a reef. If they're there, they're there. If they're not, they're not. You know what I mean? It's not like Destin, Florida, where you can go out and look for rays and these cobia following these rays. So he's like, no, well, we booked a 6-hour offshore charter and we're going for cobia and we're going for mangrove snapper. And I'm like, so how much do you think this charter is going to cost? And he goes, $600. I said, dude, like, that's an inshore 4-hour trip. And then I had to explain to him, like, the legalities of the federal and state waters, right? I'm like, you know, you booked the 4-hour inshore trip on a 24-foot boat. That boat, I'm legally only allowed to go to 9 miles. I said, you have to have federal permits to fish in federal waters. I said, I can't carry these permits around in my pocket and switch boats as I please. I have to go on the vessel that the permits are registered to. And then he's like, I know, I've been around boats all my life. And I'm like, you know what? We're not the guys for you. So text me the email address. I'll gladly refund your deposit. I'm sorry for the lack of communication. You know, like, I didn't say whose lack of communication.
Right.
I just said the lack of communication. So I refunded the money, right? Refunded his deposit. He calls me yesterday morning. I don't see why we couldn't go out today. The weather's fine. And I'm like, dude, the weather isn't the problem. The problem is your expectations, you know?
Yeah.
So he's like, well, are you free Sunday or Monday? I'm free Monday, but I'm booked as far as that guy goes.
Oh, yeah. We felt your pain several times.
You know, like, managing expectations. And I said, you know, he's like, what are you doing inshore? And I said, well, we're getting gags, we're getting snook and redfish. And he goes, I can get snook off my dock. And I'm like, then go get them, because your money's coming back and I'm not taking you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he had this really bad attitude. And I'm like, there's no way I'm spending 20 minutes with this guy, let alone 6 hours with this guy.
Yeah. That would have been a struggle of a day.
What about the flip side of the coin? Do you have, like, some returning horseshoe clients that, you know, oh, man, they can't miss?
Luckiest people in the world.
Oh, we're going on. Even if, like the clients themselves, man, they get it. They fish with us so much. They've seen the bad days. They've seen the good days. They've seen the crazy good days. You know what I mean? And they know that we work hard and we do the best that we can with what we have to get results for them. You know what I mean? Like, they know that we've made the effort on all fronts to make it happen for them. And if it doesn't happen, it's not up to us. It's up to the fish, you know? So, and we got some really good people. And, you know, like, there's one guy in, for instance, he is an orthopedic surgeon in Ohio, right? And he started like 5 years ago with me. And now it was good. He's a fly guy. He doesn't care. He just wants to catch fish. So now he's evolved in his business to where he's partnered up with some people and they own like 8 orthopedic surgery centers, right? So he's doing really good financially. He used to just come twice a year for a couple days. Well, now because he's doing good and his business has evolved, he comes down like 4 times a year and books 3 trips each time he comes. So fostering those relationships with those kind of people, as they grow and progress in their personal and financial lives, we benefit from it as well because, you know, we're able to, you know, do well for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool. We got quite a few guys like that, you know. Now it's to the point where, you know, I take a lot of people, primarily just people that I've taken before, and Johnny takes the new people. Hmm. And now Johnny has his own set of people that are coming back requesting him only, you know, so it's cool.
That is cool.
Means you're doing it right.
Right.
As far as, you know, we're concerned.
How about horrible customers?
Yeah.
Any good horrible customer stories? On the boat, funny things happening, crazy things happening.
Alcohol-related stuff, big time. You know? Yeah. Yeah, big time. you know, there's several people that we save in the phone, you know, now I save their numbers in my phone, you know, like if they're a good client and they fish with us more than twice, they're good tippers and they're good to be around. They get 5 stars, you know, but there's about 30 in my phone that are just don't book, you know, because of expectations or probably closet alcoholism that like they don't come around again. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh,
that's funny. That's for funny stories. That's for good stories. I mean, you know, there's one guy that showed up so drunk, right? Like he could not even walk. And I'm like, hey buddy, you know, this isn't going to work, man. Like, you know, it's a lot of liability. I'm like, you don't seem like you're in shape to go. I didn't mention alcohol. I just said, you don't seem like you're in the shape to go. And he points totally not in the way of the water at all. And he just points and stares for a minute. And I'm like, it was the most awkward thing, you know? And I'm like, okay, you have a good day, buddy. You know what I mean? And he turns around and stumbles away. And I'm like, holy cow, man, that would have been. Like
he didn't say anything. He just pointed.
He just like pointed with this crazy stare, like, and it was for like 10 seconds. And I'm like, okay,
might have been more than just alcohol, huh?
Oh yeah, long night. Whatever kept him awake all night.
Oh god, that's incredible.
Yeah, but for the most part, our people are good. You know, we talk to them on the phone. We're able to get a pretty good beat on them. You know, the hard part is when, because I field all the phone calls. So my voicemail says, if I don't answer, please shoot me a text. We definitely have availability for you. So they'll shoot me a text. So I'm not able to get as good of a read on people via text as I am when I talk to them on the phone. But if I don't do it via text, they're going to call the next person in line. So I would rather book them, talk about it later, you know what I mean, and get them on the books. So
smart.
And now we've kind of expanded because I was cleaning the boat one day and I looked, I had 16 phone calls to return, right? From being eight hours offshore. I come in, there's 16 charter calls. They're all from like Denver, freaking Toledo, you know, they're all looking for a charter. So I'm like, how can we, like, I'm losing all this money. You know what I mean? I have to turn all this money away. So I approached a couple other guides and basically they work, we book them and we get a percentage of their charter. You know what I mean? Like that way we don't have to turn anyone away. As long as it's an inshore charter, we get them set up. The captain is happy because he has business that he didn't have before because he probably doesn't market as well or spend the money on marketing materials or, you know, just do the Google thing or the TripAdvisor thing. So he's getting business he's happy to have, and we can make money without having to go anywhere, you know? And we're very clear in the fact that they work under their own company. They're not affiliated with Anna Maria Charter. So if you had a customer that had a negative experience, you know, it's not going to reflect on Anna Maria Charters. They're their own personal entity. And what I would like is, like, if they call them back next year, you know, is to help them build their business. You know, we've done that a couple times with people because there's plenty of business to go around. You know what I mean? Like Johnny and I are busy. We're good. We're sustainable. You know, I think growing too big is what screws people up, putting a whole bunch of money out front when there's not a lot of money coming in. You know, I think it's better to slowly grow organically, you know, that way instead of, you know, putting all your eggs in one basket. I've seen that a couple times here, like with this COVID, you know, everybody was flush. Money was good. People were calling. So they bought another boat and they hired a captain to run their other boat. Well, now, like, this December has been a normal December. People are saving their money for Christmas. You know, people aren't coming down here until the 2 weeks around Christmas. So there's guys calling me wanting fishing charters, captains that have purchased other boats, you know what I mean, and have skin in the game that kind of put the cart before the horse. You know, they didn't look at the fact like, yeah, the reason for this influx of business is because COVID's happening, you know, and now things are getting back to normal. they've got an $80,000 boat sitting in their driveway that they bought in the expectation that some other captain's going to run it for them. Now they can't afford to make the payment on the boat or to pay the other captain that had expectations of running a business with this other guy. So I think that it's important to grow slow. You know what I mean? Like, we could buy another boat and hire another captain to run it, but then we would have the responsibility of making sure that that captain is fed. You know what I mean?
Makes it hard to scale up and scale down with demand. And
right.
We've experienced the same thing here. It's like, you know, two, maybe three boats that are, you know, four boats that are under Mass Bay guides, and then we sub out several others, and that number, you know, wanes and waxes depending on the season.
Yep, and you got to look at your motives. You know, is if greed is the motive, it's probably not the right move. You know what I mean? Like, we want our people to have a good time. We're making good money doing it. If we get too greedy, something bad's going to happen.
Yeah. Yep. That's a good point. What about experiences on the water? What's been your, aside from going to the Skyway in 100 foot of visibility with no radar, what's your scariest experience on the water?
I mean, in the beginning, you know, I got caught in some pretty gnarly storms.
Yeah.
You know, me and Jess were in a really bad one once where, like, it was bad, man. I remember thinking to myself, like, did the life insurance come out of the bank account this month? I was trying to remember, like, if I saw, remember, you know, like on your statement, I was like thinking to myself, I hope it came out. You know what I mean? Like,
shit.
I hope the policy's current, because, you know, it's just an automatic payment that comes out like $50 a month or whatever for your life insurance. And I remember thinking, like, I hope that's up to date.
Is Jess just like a rough weather magnet or what? So to back up, Jess came up here when you came up here and caught your tuna and all that stuff. And it was not nice that day. So paint the picture this day.
So we all went out. It was like it wasn't a buddy trip because it was a paid charter, but it was like somebody's birthday. So they chartered me and I knew all the guys, right? And man, it was like so bad. Like, the storm rolled in. We were at anchor, and I'm like, it doesn't look that bad on the radar. It looks like it's going to blow through quick. And it was freaking gnarly. And we're all huddled under the center console T-top, and this lightning bolt cracked, right? And it was like, dude, giant waves, just pelting rain, lightning everywhere. And this lightning cracked above me, and I heard the guy, Zach, next to me, and he was doing the lightning count. You know what I mean? Like, when it cracks, you can count. And he goes, it cracked. It was like, boom, boom. And he goes, one. And then, oh, no, it flashed. And then he counted. And he goes, one. And then it cracked. And he's like, it's right the fuck above us. And I was like, yeah, this ain't good. So we just waited it out until, you know, it was like semi-okay. But then conditions were terrible. And we were coming in. And my buddy Terry, that works at West Marine, he was riding on the front seat, and he was so sick, and he's laying down, and we hit this wave, and he flew up, and he landed on his head off the front seat. Boom! Like, from the wave. Landed on his head and neck, and I'm like, ugh. So that was a bad one. That was definitely a bad one.
Yeah, you guys got gnarly storms, gnarly fronts.
The lightning.
And they come so fast, and the lightning is just hell, and the wind with it. But then afterwards, it can just go right back to glass. Beautiful. It's so crazy. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
That is right.
I'm now thinking of lightning stories with us. Remember that one? Remember that squall we got caught in on the bank early this year in like July, and I had to tie off to the Fortuna?
Yeah. It was like, it was so windy. It was calm.
Yeah.
Crazy. You know that feeling? Yeah. Like, it's like downwind.
Yeah.
Some
kind, I think like they call it a microburst.
It was a microburst. Yeah. 100%.
The water was like black, jet black, and like this tight ripple in the water, and Brian was screaming like a little girl behind the
boat. I'm in a center console, you know, we're 20 miles offshore, and, you know, OG's on the radio. He's like, I'm going to throw my anchor and tie off to me for this thing. But then it got gnarly.
It was bad.
It got gnarly. It was like all happened in the matter of like 15 minutes, but it was like,
that's the thing. It looks like you're looking at the radar and you're like, okay, we got a little time. And then all of a sudden it's like, holy shit, it's on us. Yeah.
Yep. It's crazy how fast it happens. I mean, our weather's in the summer. It's kind of similar to those crazy storms that you guys have, you know, come through.
Yeah.
It happens so fast.
They rip through. Yeah. The cool experiences are when we get to see those whale sharks. You know, that's a pretty cool thing. That never gets old.
I've yet to see one, and you have some pretty sick sick content of them.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to come across them.
What time of the year is that typically?
Summer. You know, summer. like right in the middle of summer when the water's good and warm. Yeah, we came across those three big ones this year, and that was sick, man. Like some of the media was purchased by a company in England, actually. Like, they purchased the content from me. I took like several videos, you know, and they're like, we want to buy some. So they bought like this one video in particular. I wasn't able to use it again because they purchased it. Wow. But I had three other videos, you know what I mean? And it was sold. So basically they're a media outlet. So people purchase media from them, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So that was kind of cool.
That's cool. That's awesome.
Now, do you, can you catch fish off those whales? Like, is there cobia falling or anything like that?
Yeah,
or do you just there
can be big cobia on them. Yeah. No, normally when you find them and they're like 30 or 40 miles, somebody's been there. You know what I mean? Like, somebody's seen them before you. But yeah, we've caught cobia off of them. It's just cool to watch them too. You know what I mean? Just to watch the cobia with them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we found like those ones, they had some smaller cobia on them. Nothing we threw at. But, you know, I mean, they can have those 80 pounders on them. You know what I mean? Like the big dogs.
Yeah.
That's how they get those big ones up in Destin. You know, those 10 foot, 12 foot manta rays, those big cobia are following them. That's fun sight fishing.
Cool fish.
It is.
Yeah.
Prehistoric.
They're you so weren't catching strong. Any yesterday, though. I can tell you about that, you know.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't believe he called me back, you know, and he's like, if you're free Monday, I'm like, oh, no, man, I'm sorry.
What, so, dude, I can think of like a million stories to talk about, the Everglades trip being one of them, but what are some of your bucket list destinations? You're an adventurous guy, so I could imagine you have a lot of bucket list places you want to go and fish and travel.
Well, getting the Golden Dorado down in the Amazon. Those are crazy fish on fly. They're huge. They're angry. They're like a jack, but they jump. You know, imagine a jack that jumps.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're angry. They got real toot. The way that we did that kingfish leader and Albrighted in that piece of wire, that's what you got to do when you're fly fishing for them. That and the Seychelles, you know, getting those GTs, and they got those. They
that
got nice
insane.
Permit. Yeah, they got permit over there and nice bonefish. It's probably, you know, very similar to fishing for jacks. I mean, GT is a giant jack, you know, a giant blue jack, basically, but just angry, fast, ferocious fish. So that's on the list. And a milkfish in Indonesia. That's a pretty cool one. But they only eat algae. Yeah, milkfish. Yeah. They look similar to a ladyfish, but they got this huge tail and they get like 20 pounds. But they only eat algae, so your flies have to look like a little piece of grass. It's weird. And they just open their mouths, and they ride in the waves. They just have their mouths open right in the waves. So it's all about having that fly and leading them in precision, which is hard, you know?
Huh.
Good challenge.
They don't go out of their way to eat. They just kind of keep their mouth open and swim.
Yep, exactly. Wow. But they'll break your knuckles if you try and cup the reel. You know what I mean? Like, they're so strong. Like, you. Really? You know, we get people that see videos and like, I'm going to cut the reel to slow the fish down. And then the reel spins around, the handle cuts their thumb open, the handle breaks off, and the fish spools the reel. And I'm like, look, I know it was a cool fucking video you watched, but like, there's a drag on there for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, let the drag do it. We're in open water. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's fun. I love it when that happens. I will pay the $100 for another reel handle just to like be like, bro, see?
All fly fishing destinations.
It is. You have some good fly fishing clients, or are they all mediocre?
Yeah, I got some good ones. I got some good ones. I got a good one coming on Wednesday, but it's going to be blowing 30. I can't take him. He was the president of Penn State. You know, and he was involved in law. Actually, some of the laws that he wrote are what sent Bill Cosby to prison.
Wow.
You know, like some of the laws that he like got passed are what dictated some of the sentencing guidelines. Crazy.
Interesting. Huh.
But I don't think I'll be able to take him. You know, it's going to be blowing hard.
What percentage of trips are fly trips for you, roughly?
Probably 30. You know, we have a time of year where fly trips are a little bit better. Yeah, it's good. It's good because you get to tie the fly. You know, like I tie all my own flies for the trips, you know, because we know, you know, what weight the eyes need to be or what fish we're going to be targeting. Or, you know, if it's mackerel and kingfish, we can put them on a long shank. You know, we tie the hooks way, tie the eyes way back on a long shank. So you got like this much shank hanging out in front of the target for the fish. So it keeps it out of their teeth. You know, the permit flies, you know, you need some heavy weight on the eyes, you know, so that they sink. Cause permit always, always hit it on the drop. My ear pods are dying. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
All right, cool. Yeah. So we know, you know, we can get a bead on, you know, like what fly we need for the occasion.
Can you hear me? Yeah, we can hear you.
Turning off my blow up Snoopy fan.
My neighbor has like a 20-foot tall snowman on his front yard right now.
It's a Snoopy. You have a snowman?
My neighbor and I share a front yard, and he has a 20-foot tall snowman out there right now.
Nice.
What's your favorite, like personal favorite, proudest catch on one of your own flies?
I tied what's called a Bissett's mud bug, which is a, you know, a specific type of fly this guy named Lucas Bissett tied, and it got picked up by Orvis, you know, cause it's a really good pattern. And, so I went to New Orleans, and then I fished with a guy out of Hopedale, which is about 45 minutes to an hour south of, New Orleans. And we all met up in this shop, right? This like coffee shop, breakfast place. They do it way different there than here. Like here, we pick you up at the dock and we're fishing in like 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
There we met him at the ass crack of dawn at this diner, and there's like five other guides and all their clients. And we're all at this big table and we have breakfast, and Lucas Bissett was one of the guys at the table, right? And I'm like, oh, sweet, I'm going to be throwing your fly today. So we have breakfast. It's like 9 a.m., right? I'm like, are we going to go fishing today, you know? So we all follow them to this boat ramp, you know what I mean? And they all launch their boats, and they bullshit for like 20 more minutes. So then we ride out to the Chandelier Islands, which is like a chain island south of New Orleans. Dude, and we come into this, like, it looked like a herd of cows grazing. But it was all these giant black drum and redfish. And I got a 29-pound red on fly that was on that guy Lucas Bissett's mud bug that I met him that morning. So that was pretty cool. So now I've got the photo framed, you know, of that redfish. 29 pounds, very large redfish. And then the flies hanging over in the corner. And I get a lot of real pretty brown trout in Montana on flies that I tie, which is super rewarding.
That's cool. What other cool trinkets do you have? I'm a trinket guy and you're a trinket guy. Your house is littered with trinkets and memorabilia. What other top contenders you got lying around the White household?
Like trinket wise?
Yeah, like, you know, I got this like walrus tusk or, you know, whatever you have from your adventures.
Well, down in the Everglades, there was a guy named EJ Watson. And like when they first settled it, he was a sugarcane farmer. Like, the sugar cane that is raised in Florida now is all a branch from this guy's sugar cane in 1890. You know what I mean? Like, he brought over the initial sugar cane. All this sugar cane is a descendant from his sugar cane. Well, he was an outlaw who had killed a couple people in North Florida, right? So this island down there in the middle of nowhere, right? The mosquitoes would carry you away. But he built this...
I've been there, so I know exactly, like, I've heard this story in the environment, so I know I'm putting myself in
this. If you bring a woman there, she would kill herself. So
that's gross.
Yeah, Brian, and we went in the winter.
Yeah, exactly, when it wasn't bad whatsoever.
I mean, you can hear, if you cast the lure and your bait hits the mangroves, you rouse up a freaking school of sleeping mosquitoes that turns into a black cloud and comes for your boat. It's like a wasp nest. So So anyway, this dude, you know, he was on the run from the law, basically. He was wanted. And in the 1800s, I mean, like, you could just move away and they wouldn't find you. So he moved down there and started this big sugar plantation, right? It's kind of a messed up story, but so he would hire workers from, because everything went out of Key West. So they would drive, you know, the sugar and whatever crops they grew there down to Key West. It was purchased in Key West by people from New York, your guys' area up in Boston. And then it was driven up the Atlantic coast, you know, to like facilitate the markets up there. So this guy would go down there and he'd find vagrant workers, you know, and he'd, hey, come work on my sugar plantation. I'll pay you, yada, yada. They'd go work for him. Well, then when they would all go down to drive the sugar cane crop, you know, the molasses back down to the Keys, he would just off them and toss them over so he didn't have to pay him.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a ruthless dude. But I got a brick from his fireplace.
That's pretty intense.
That is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's 1890. You know
what I mean?
That's
insane. Where does the brick live? He's finding it right now in the garage.
There it is.
There it is. The corrupt brick right there.
Well, the brick wasn't corrupt. The man who built it.
Guilty by association.
Dude, the Florida Everglades,
that's the most
man,
random artifact.
The Florida Everglades,
that's a great artifact.
10 times more dangerous than the Wild West in the 1800s, man.
I can imagine.
Like 10 times worse. I mean, you just disappear. In the Wild West, you had to bury people. In the Everglades, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, like, nature takes care of it. Yeah, it's a crazy place. Sharks, alligators, saltwater crocodiles, crabs, let alone, like, Florida panthers, bobcats.
Snakes.
I mean, it's all legit down
there. Speaking of snakes, give us some snake stories.
Just the python hunting deal?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't found a big one yet. You know, like, I want to find a big one. But, yeah, the Everglades is full of snakes, man. You'll see 20 cottonmouths in a day, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's a wild place, dude.
So you're like a python hunter.
I'm going down the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th coming up. So a couple weeks.
Bringing the camper down and doing that whole deal? Nice.
Yep. Doing it right. I'm going way down there by Flamingo this time, though.
Are you bringing the whaler with you and stuff, too?
Nope. Leaving the boat. I'm just going to be kind of trekking around.
That's awesome.
Yep. I'm stoked. We got a J.J. Gray concert, actually, on New Year's Eve. And then New Year's Day, we'll chill. And then I'll leave the next morning. Go for 4 days.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Riley howling?
Riley's howling.
Does he ever howl?
I've never heard him howl like that.
It's only when you're doing a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's awesome, dude. I wish I was going down there. I want to go back.
Yeah, the Everglades are addicting. You know, it's awesome because there's nobody there. It's vast. I mean, it's the way it's supposed to be. You know what I mean?
You feel you're truly off the grid, you know, depending on where you go. But most places you go, you're off the grid.
And what's cool is that you bring, like, a stove, some blackening seasoning, some tortilla shells, and, like, a pan, and you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you're good. Yeah. I mean, if you're into it, like, I'm into it. You know what I mean? Like, it's cool.
No, it's an adventure.
Yeah. If you don't catch fish, you don't eat, so you better know how to fucking catch fish. Yeah, but I went down, I think it was July, and pulled up on this beach. You know, I mean, the beaches are like 10 miles, 20 miles long, and there's like, you know, there's just nobody there. I mean, it's just endless. And we were fishing. We caught a nice triple tail, kept it for lunch, and then I'm just chilling on this beach. We were cooking elk sausage over this fire, like on the beach, you know, for breakfast. And there's all these giant blue crabs, man. So we dipped up like 10 big blue crabs, and that was our dinner. You know what I mean? It was freaking sweet.
That's amazing.
That's sick.
That's amazing. True adventure. I love
that. That's cool.
We'll have to plan another Everglades trip with.
Yeah, I've yet to go.
OG wants
Dude,
to
if
go.
If all three of us went down there, or four of us, you two guys, me and my buddy Nate, and we all took the beaver tail down there, you freak out, man. Like, we've got the tarpon figured out down there now. Like, it took a couple years, but, like, we got them figured out.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
I still have to check the bucket list box for that.
Yeah. I wish that we would have known that 1,000 fish were going to be there that day.
That was bizarre.
Was that off Egmont? Is that where that was?
Yep, right off the north tip, man. That was so many. That was crazy. And they were biting.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
We improvised with what we had, though. I mean, it was cool. We got one, you know?
Yeah, we hooked another one, or another two. Forget.
Yeah, two other ones. Yeah, we're 1 for 3 on them.
Yeah. That's sick. Yeah, those fish fight hard.
Yeah, the jumps are sick. It's great.
Yep.
I always look forward to when those come around. This last year, the water quality was bad, so we didn't get them as good as we normally do. But, this year, hopefully, it'll be better.
Yeah. What else you got, Bri? Anything?
That's honestly that's the bulk of it, you know, other than how do people follow you, find you, follow and find Anna Maria Charters and
so we have
info for going
page.
Down there.
You know, we have a Facebook page, Anna Maria Charters. I have an Instagram, Captain David 941. We're good about posting our offshore stuff. And little snippets of inshore stuff, but I don't put a whole lot of inshore stuff on there because, you know, it's a small area. If you put too many backgrounds, you know, you're going to ruin a good thing. So I try to kind of limit it on Instagram quite a bit. But then we have our website, AnnaMariaIsland.fishing, and that shows everything that we offer.
I was just on it this morning. Very well laid out, easy to find trip information.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. We're going to put a little bit of work into it here soon. You know, my buddy who did that movie, Free Solo, is going to kind of get on there and kind of add some better video.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're in the moment video.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, because he put up a whole bunch of fishing pictures. I mean, it gets redundant. You know what I mean?
You need cinematic action.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. That's so crazy. It's all about time, you know, having time, you know, with a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-month pregnant wife and a business. It's kind of hard to have time.
You're doing a pretty good job, though, and being able to host guests and have a fish fry and not miss a beat. It's pretty impressive.
Make time for what's important. You know?
That's good. That's good. We appreciate it. And we appreciate all the trips that we've had with you. And
oh, yeah.
You know, having you up here is still like no joke. That fish like is one of those fish you never forget.
Oh yeah,
you know, like there's plenty
that
where
whole
I could
day,
see
the whole battle, everything.
Yeah, that was a special day for sure.
Tonight we got like 3 pounds of stone crab claws, the jumbos, right? So I'm gonna crack them all and make stone crab cakes with gag. So I think I'm gonna do gag stuff, stone crab cakes.
That sounds unreal.
I
picked up a 10-pound prime rib for Christmas yesterday.
I saw that, bro.
Yeah.
I know. I haven't done it. I didn't do it last year. I did it the year before, I think.
You were the inspiration. I remember seeing you tagged me in your final product. I was like, that's on this year's menu.
Don't forget to stuff garlic cloves into that thing.
Okay.
You know, like a little knife-sized hole. And stuff those clothes down in there.
Roger that.
Big, big, big deal.
Okay.
Yeah, I think done. I might go get one of those, man.
You should. You should wait till after the holidays, though. The butcher shop that I called yesterday, great people, Previties in Hanover. I use them for like the steak tips and all that stuff we bring up to PEI for all the folks that go on that trip.
Yeah.
I talked to the guy yesterday. Over 2,000 Christmas roast orders. 2,000.
And it's probably crazy expensive.
Dude. And the case is still full and they're still cutting stuff for people like leading up to the holiday, but 2,000 pre-orders. At 200 bucks a pop.
Well, you got to think like last year Christmas was weird, you know, like
Yeah.
Yeah, no, a lot of people didn't have them.
Yeah, they didn't get to together. So this year, I think people are going all out. My mom's like blowing me up, like, what am I bringing? What am I going to cook? And I'm like, look, last year we had like public subs. You know, like we get up and watch the girls open presents, and then we just kind of lay around and like eat public subs at will, you know?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm all about that. The less responsibility, the better.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but we need to plan an Everglades trip. Like, if you guys got to fly down here for a couple days, like, we should do it, man. And do it right.
100% can do it. I don't know if we could squeak it for this coming year, but the following year for sure, or after next season.
When does your season...
Our busiest time is basically from the last week in April through Halloween, first week in November, if you include like boat prep and boat winterizing.
You got a plan for March.
Yeah. This March we're going to the Canaries, so it's not going to happen this March.
That's right. Next March.
Next March, though.
I'm just hoping I'm still alive after this next kid.
You will be. You'll be fine.
You're fine. You got this.
You'll be all right. You'll get
like
through.
I'm running on 2.5 hours, man.
Just have another monster and you're good.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm a week with no monsters today.
Are you really?
You just decided it's done. The end?
Yeah. Yep. It's the end.
They really aren't good.
A good espresso in the morning and then water throughout the day.
Yeah.
Look at you.
I'm a big apple juice guy. I drink apple juice every time. Brutal. Oh, yeah. It's bad.
Yeah. It was like legit sugar withdrawal.
Oh, God.
That's awesome.
Well, thanks, buddy. We've been doing this now for an hour and a half, believe it or not.
All right. Yeah. Well, I hope this one was somewhat, interesting.
It definitely is. You're always an international man of mystery. You know, you're like a true Renaissance man. Snake hunter, charter captain, husband of three, orchid aficionado.
Murderer brick holder.
Yeah, murderer brick holder, trinket enthusiast. Like, you really have Everglades specialist. You got it all going on.
Aviator-erist.
I'm not gonna run out of things to say for your intro, needless to say. Yeah. So
we like to keep busy.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this with us. We'll have it up in like, probably.
Yep, you got it. I'm actually gonna go to Publix and see if they have any prime rib.
Good. Pick up a sub while you're there too.
I will.
All right, we're gonna end this on OG's three words of wisdom. Remember, you can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust their instincts. And the last one, you'll just have to keep listening. Stay tight, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in to the SeaRose Fishing Podcast. If you would like more information about today's guest, our episode and show sponsors, or if you want to order hats and apparel, please visit our website at SeaRoseFishing.com. You can also stay up to date on all the latest SeaRose Fishing content and podcast episodes by following us on Instagram at SeaRoseFishing. Finally, to book a trip with us through our family-run charter fishing company, please visit massbayguides.com or see our latest updates and fishing reports by following Mass Bay Guides on Instagram and Facebook.